Oh, yeah. A lot of Mets and Yankees early on in this program. The Yankee fans still reeling after losing another series to the Red Sox. The Met fan ticked off for their Monday afternoon loss to the Pittsburgh Pirates. Coming up in just a few minutes, the other jinx that may have affected the New York Mets, plus Pete Alonso being an all-star. And we'll get back to your calls at 888-808-1019. But I say this for a lot of people out there. Sometimes you got to be the voice of the voiceless. And as someone who just traveled America, I drove up to Vermont. I drove down to Washington, D.C. I drove down to Raleigh, North Carolina. I have seen quite a few rest stops. I have seen quite a few highways. And let me make a suggestion that New Jersey has right. That New Jersey has nailed, but the state of Virginia has their head up their ass. The state of Vermont their head up their ass.
That's my home state. Watch out.
I'm putting you guys over.
Virginia.
Go ahead. Virginia, that's right. Mm. Crap. Yeah, I'm not putting Virginia over.
Okay.
When I get off I-95 or any highway, okay, because it's a rest stop.
Yes.
By law, a rest stop needs to have a bathroom and a gas station. If you do not have a gas station and you do not have a bathroom, what's the point? What's the point? Now, when you get off the Lombardi or you get off the Gandolfini or whatever New Jersey Turnpike rest stop you have, I can guarantee you there is a bathroom, there is a Nathan's, and there is a gas station.
True.
When you're in the state of Maryland, the fine state of Maryland, but only north of Baltimore, and you stop at the Chesapeake Welcome Center, there's a gas station, there's a bathroom, and there's food. But when you stop at one of those fugazi rest stops in the state of Virginia, Virginia's for lovers, Virginia's for a waste of time at rest stops, there's no gas station. Some of them didn't even have bathrooms.
That's right.
What's the point?
I do not know, to be perfectly honest with you. I think that probably it has something to do with getting to towns as opposed to stopping on the side of the road.
So they want you to go into a town?
They want you to go into a town.
I don't want to go into your towns.
I know, but that's what it is. And the reason those rest stops don't have bathrooms is because they're usually just for truckers to just pull over and sleep. And so they don't need anything, maybe just a bathroom, but the truck, they would have filled up somewhere else.
But what about the common man and woman who just wants to get gas at 12 a.m.?
They don't care about you.
We don't want to pull over where they say, oh, there's a Texaco right there. Then you pull over and they give you the surprise. It's 3.5 miles away.
But the difference,
if I knew it was 3.5 miles away, I'm not getting
the
off.
The difference between the New Jersey Turnpike and I forget what it's called through going through Maryland because my mom lives down there. So I know
John F. Kennedy.
I know exactly where you're talking about. I've been on that road a million times.
I think it's the John F. Kennedy Memorial Highway.
I think you're right. The difference between that and now rural Virginia is the thousands and thousands and thousands of cars that come through the New Jersey Turnpike and whatever it is, FDR in Maryland.
JFK
in Maryland. Once you get south of that, it's less traffic. It's people just going through, and they're not thinking about stopping.
Yeah, I hate that.
I'm just telling you, that's what it is.
I'm going to give you advice, all right? If you are on I-95.
It's been that way for my entire life.
I know, me too, but it still
stinks.
It is not
changing.
I'm telling you, it stinks. I can't demand changes. I'm just telling you that if you are on I-95 this summer, wherever you're driving, maybe you're going down to D.C., maybe you're going down to North Carolina or South Carolina
or
Georgia.
Well, D.C., you'll be fine. D.C., you'll be fine.
No, you won't because you still have to get off. Nobody wants to get off. Well, you know, no one wants to pull off an exit and then get the surprise of where's the gas station. Like, that's my only issue. My issue is if I'm pulling off because I got to get gas, don't tell me once I pull off, oh, by the way, it's 2.5 miles away. I don't want to drive 2.5 miles in rural Virginia. Mm. If it's right off the highway, let me know. I got no problem. If it's right off the highway, I got no issue. Like, right, look how much I know highways. Right under the city of Richmond, there is a stop. I'm going to guess it's like exit 22. You pull off, and there's a gas station right there. It's a beautiful thing. There's a hotel right there. Petersburg, Virginia, same thing. I love it.
And 90, on 95?
Yes, right.
Oh, yeah. I guess there's an extension around 95.
I know 95 better than you do.
Right. But there's an extension around. You can go around it, you know.
Oh, can you? Yeah. I do that when there's traffic, I guess. I do that when Google Maps tells me to do it. Are you a Waze guy or a Google Maps guy?
I am an Apple Maps guy.
What?
Yes.
Why would you waste your time with that?
Why would I not? Waze lies to you, especially if you're in a city, because it gets blocked by the towers. And Google Maps, I don't want to put a Google app on my phone.
Oh, you're anti-Google?
I already have an Apple app on my phone.
I don't know if Apple Maps has this. I'm not sure if Waze added this, but I'm a Google Maps guy. I'm very loyal to Google Maps, and I will always put wherever I'm going into Google Maps.
Yes.
Even if I know where I'm going. So when I come to work every day, or during the summer, mm-hmm. every once in a while when I come to work, I'll put the address in, just so it tells me if there's traffic, what time I'm going to get there. Today, for the very first time, I don't know if anyone else noticed this, I put in the address for Google Maps, and it showed me not just the speed limit of where I was driving, it showed me how fast I was going.
Oh,
how about that?
Yeah. Apple's
been
doing
that
forever.
Is that a new feature?
Waze has been doing it since it started.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Damn it.
Waze has been doing it for a very long time.
Oh,
yes.
Have they?
Yes.
Sorry.
It tells you if you're speeding.
No, I find that to be really helpful. Because
it also tells you where the cops are.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Waze does, definitely.
I don't like Waze because it's too much of a cartoon. I'm not watching a cartoon. I'm trying to drive to work.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Or I'm trying to drive to North Carolina.
You don't like having Oscar the Grouch tell you where to go for Waze?
I don't like it. I don't like it at all. Plus, I've got one of those Apple CarPlay things, and I don't think if Waze goes on CarPlay, does it?
Yes,
I believe it does.
Definitely does.
I'll give it a try today when I'm driving home.
Mazel tov.
Thank you very much. Now, let's get to Steve Cohen, because he's the real problem.
What?
Yeah.
What
if you guys
Steve
believe
in this conversation,
I'll tell you how. If you believe in jinxes and curses, which I choose not to, by the way, but I like to give you the information that you deserve.
Mm-hmm.
There have been, as we talked about, you could rewind on the Odyssey app about 20 minutes ago. There's been this thought that the OMG concert somehow got the Mets into this funk. They're 4-6 in their last 10 games.
Did not OMG get them into their winning streak as well? I know all of you wanted to talk about Grimace, but it was never Grimace. It was always OMG.
Yeah.
Grimace was just kind of the side buddy that was hanging around.
Grimace, you're our lucky charm.
No, you weren't Grimace. You were just maybe some gravy on top, or maybe a little fondant.
Right, but Tiki wants to say Grimace was the side piece.
Exactly.
That's what he wants
to say. It was OMG the whole time. Maybe it was Grimace's ass they were smacking.
Well, now there's been this reversal, this thought that the concert somehow got the Mets cool. What have I told you that on Saturday early afternoon? So keep this in mind. Mets win on Friday, 7-2. Concert occurs, great night at Citi Field. Steve Cohen, who never tweets, decided to tweet, quote, "There is something special happening at Citi Field. The players have come together and are playing for each other. The atmosphere is electric. Let's keep this going." And since that tweet, 4-6.
Okay, but that's not bad.
I'm just saying.
It's just who you are.
Okay. So you don't buy that?
They're still together. They're still special. There's no strife happening.
So was it Steve Cohen's tweet or was it the OMG concert?
It was none of it. It was the fact that your bullpen has all season stunk. Period.
And the offense has gotten cold a little bit.
Yeah. A little bit, except for Vientos, who gets two hits every single night.
Yeah, it's all those boring baseball reasons, not Steve Cohen tweeting at 1 p.m. Here's the problem. It's not touching the money, but it's one of those things where when good times are rolling, you just want to let it roll.
You don't need to say it.
You don't need to say it.
Nah, I agree with that. You don't say it. Just say like it's all good.
Mr. Positivity.
We're playing well.
Any issue with that tweet from Stevie?
No issue at all. I love banging the drum of positivity. And here's what I take umbrage with Met fans. You got on the guy when he said a couple weeks ago in London, when he was like, well, Met fans have seen worse. And he said the pizza in London is better than New York, which is ridiculous. So you can't have it both ways. He's the owner. He's on Twitter. If you want him to delete Twitter, that's a different conversation. But when things are going well, remember when they had that really horrible stretch in Tampa? And he said, God, this is awful. So he's giving you both. He used to go into witness protection when they were losing. At least he's giving you, hey, this sucks. But when things are going well, he's promoting his business. He wants people at the park. He's going to say things are going great.
You remember back when he first bought the team?
Oh, yeah.
How active he was on Twitter?
He's not quite as active.
Not nearly at all.
He will throw in a passing, hey, this is amazing how bad we are. And then a month later, he'll throw in a, hey, this is awesome. Things are amazing.
That's the fans have been worse.
Yeah, that's usually what he gives us. We'll get to Pete Alonso being an all-star and how that annoys every Met fan, but let's get back to your calls, 888-808-1019. Thomas in Bricktown, New Jersey. What's up, Tom?
Hey, listen, I'm 83 years old.
Wow.
I know where all the bodies are buried.
Wow.
Okay.
I'm going to tell you that there was something that happened when the Core Four was born. should have been the core five. And the fifth guy was Buck Showalter.
Oh.
That team, something happened that turned out good, but it was bad for Buck, was that Joe Torre got the job. And I remember I was crazy with Little League Baseball at that time, and I listened to him announce the Little League World Series. And I'm saying, what? I'm going to put Joe Torre as manager of the Yankees?
But look how it worked out, Tom. You know where the bodies are buried,
that worked. It did. But I'm saying it's just fate sometimes.
Yeah, and look, sometimes things are unfair, but they work and they make sense. And looking back on it now, having history to look back on, Joe Torre was the perfect guy at the perfect moment with the perfect roster. He was the guy for that team. He was not this incredible tactician, maybe the way Buck was, but what he was able to do that I'm not sure Buck would have been able to do at that age, remember he was 38 years old, was to manage the egos that Joe Torre managed so successfully for the next decade.
Yeah, get out of the way of the X's and O's. Let them play baseball, but also help them be okay to each other or with each other.
Yeah.
Because sometimes that's half the battle. If you have a super talented, which clearly that Yankee dynasty did, you have a super talented team. The hard part is not getting them to play great. It's getting them to not be jerks.
Right? And also having guys understand, like think about 96 specifically. He had Wade Boggs on the bench. He had Tino Martinez and Cecil Fielder at times on the bench. Like these are stars. In one case, a Hall of Famer. And I'm not sure how Buck Showalter would have handled that. And that's not a knock on him. It's more that move, as crazy as it sounded at the time, clueless Joe on the back page, all that, he was the perfect guy at the right moment. Don't let Buck Showalter facing kind of an unlucky situation be the reason why you want to hire him almost 30 years later. You hire him because you think he's the right guy. That you think that this Yankee team, despite being 18 games above 500, needs to hit that lever of desperation and change the manager. And feel like that's the personality that would somehow spark the team. I'm not saying it is. In fact, I don't think it is.
Yeah.
But that's got to be your reason, not because of what happened in 95.
After Buck's last two seasons with the Mets, does that feel like what he's going to give the Yankees?
No.
Exactly.
I don't think it's the right thing.
Doesn't feel like it to me.
I would not pull the lever of desperation.
I would.
Some Yankee fans would. I would not. Now, earlier in the show, we did put out a poll on social media. We gave you all the favorites. We played the hits. Like an FM radio music station. And that was, if the Yankees get desperate enough to fire Aaron Boone, which of these replacements would you want? And we gave you all the hits, all the guys that you've probably called up this radio station and suggested over the last 5 years. Don Mattingly, Joe Girardi, Buck Showalter, and Carlos Beltran. And Don Mattingly is your winner, 34% of the vote. 25% said Buck Showalter, 23% said Joe Girardi, and 18% said Carlos Beltran. So the manager that won you a World Series finished third. Think about it that way. Chris in Manhattan. How you doing, Chris?
Hey, guys. Glad you had a nice holiday. Evan, I think that those choices are all still pretty safe. You guys should get even more out-of-the-box choices for that poll.
Who do you want, A-Rod? Is that
I don't know. No, like Deion Sanders. I don't know. People don't know the sports. Hey. Like, really? Go for it.
He perceptually is doing a great job at Colorado.
Exactly. Why not? He's a winner. Right. Listen, I want to talk about this manager thing from a perspective of a Mets fan. So I'm watching a Mets game today, seventh inning. They're losing 7-2. An easy game to phone it in, right? And I look at Lindor running down the first, busting it. Alvarez busting it. Bader cuts off a ball that could have been a double.
Mm-hmm.
And I give the Mets a lot of credit. The effort is there. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know what happened at the end of the game, but they're playing hard.
It's the bullpen. That's what happened at the end of the game.
They also managed to score only two runs in the game.
And that was only because Nimmo mashed one. But yeah, you're right. But they play hard. You don't have to worry about that with this team, because I think there's a lot of guys on this team that are always trying to prove it.
But
the only one that's not is Lindor.
Kiki, you're right, but I want to make a point about the manager thing. Like, we all lament about how analytics is like, the managers have no say in this and that, and we can even look at what Evan said about the pitch count with Christian Scott. Clearly, that was probably some edict that came in from analytics and above.
Yeah.
Now, one of the things I think that analytics can never do is to have personal interactions with players, and this is why I don't understand why Aaron Boone gets off the hook. How can you tell me that a manager can't have a positive influence into a player who's not showing max effort? Tika, you played. Isn't that something that a coach or a manager can have a profound effect
on?
Yeah,
well, in football it's different because you're easily replaceable. I mean, there's a roster of a ton of guys, and it's just there's always someone waiting to behind you because guess what? I could get hurt and be done for the rest of the season. So they need someone capable right behind you. So in football, it's a little bit different. In baseball, you're not getting a replacement level play. Like, it's not going to be somebody who's like slightly marginally less good than you.
Right.
Right. In baseball, it's going to be significantly less good than you are. And so the threat of go sit down, we're going to play somebody else, doesn't really work in baseball. Like, it, I mean, I guess in theory it worked for Gleyber Torres when he sat down with that groin injury, whatever it was diagnosed as. But I think for the most part, you just got to trust that they're going to get themselves back to where they've always been.
One thing that's sort of humorous about Gleyber Torres is Gleyber didn't play the last two games. Mm-hmm. And he didn't play the last two games because on Friday night, he was beating out a ball, running really, really hard.
And he hurt his groin.
And he appeared to injure his groin. And I'm not laughing because I don't want Gleyber to be hurt, but it's funny that for a guy who's been criticized for not hustling, that hustling may actually have contributed to his latest injury.
Don't tell me you're Giancarlo Stanton either. You're 27 years old.
No.
That can't be, I'm running too hard. I'm therefore unavailable.
What I think the Yankees may be missing, and I think a lot of teams or organizations, maybe even our own company misses, is that I'm trying to think of I don't really have a good example for us, plus people really don't care, so I'll just use the sports analogy. Sometimes you've got a manager that's a player's manager. And all the players love him. But maybe you've got guys on your coaching staff that will bust that ass.
Right.
And one thing we've heard about is that Carlos Mendoza used to bust Gleyber Torres' ass.
Right.
That Mendy would really get on him. And it worked, right? To some extent it worked.
So we're missing Mendy.
Or someone like Mendy. Like, it doesn't mean he can't be replaced.
Yeah.
And look, you serve a different role when you're the manager of a team, because I don't know if Mendy does that right now with the Mets. Maybe he doesn't have to. Maybe it's kind of like, hey, it's better for my underlings to do it because it's a good cop, bad cop thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's like when you have two bosses and one guy's like, oh, nice. Like the architect. He's the nice guy. Now, I don't think Ryan Hurley's a bad guy, but Spike certainly was. So it worked out well. Good cop, bad cop, right? And I do wonder if that's something that maybe they're missing, that they weren't able to replace Mendy being a hard ass.
Maybe. It's something you don't even think about. Like, you don't think about the makeup of the staff, not the pitching staff, but the organization under the skip. You just think about the players.
Right.
But that matters. I mean, coaching matters.
No doubt about it. Maybe Carlos Mendoza would have been the one to go up to Anthony Volpe and say, who the hell do you think you are?
Mm-hmm.
Like, seriously, what the hell's going on with you? You run through home. There's no reason to slow down. There's no reason to take it easy. Let's go to Jameel in Fords, New York. What's up, Jameel? Hello, Jameel.
What's up, Jameel?
Jameel going once. Damn it. I wanted to hear from Jameel.
Jameel is eating a meal.
look at you. His subject line was, I caught Wade Boggs' hat. Do you know what that story was? Because I'm now very curious.
I know.
I screened him about a half hour ago, so I forgot the story. But
damn it!
It was a great one. He'll call back. Jameel, call back.
Mm. All right. I need to know how he caught Wade Boggs' hat. David's in Woodmere. What's up, David?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good.
So I just wanted to mention, I think the thing is Cashman has made some very good moves in the past, like getting David Justice and, you know, when he got Lance Berkman and Kerry Wood, I think it was 2011. But
look at that. Like that's some recall right there. Pulling up some old school cash deals. I like it, David.
13 years ago.
I have to be fair because I'm about to criticize it.
Oh, okay.
Throw some sugar before you throw the salt.
So I feel like when in 2010, I remember they said the Cliff Lee deal was on the 1 yard line.
Yes.
And they didn't pull the trigger. And I understand it's just that it scares me because they also could have Luis Castillo and Corbin Burns this offseason. And I know he has made trades, but it seems like he's unwilling. Those are years where they really could have gone for it. And I feel like you see how hard it is, especially now the way baseball is, to win a World Series. And when you have that opportunity, I feel like he's a little bit gun-shy to, you know, pull the trigger, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I mean, it's really hard to do that every year. It's really hard to just say, we're going to give up whatever we got to give up because we're going for it this year. And if you do it enough, you're going to deplete yourself so thin, at least your farm system, that you're going to end up in these gross reset years.
I don't think when you look at this team right now, and again, the New York Yankees still have a record that positions themselves as 18 games above 500 in the thick of things in the American League East and certainly in the catbird seat in terms of being a wild card team.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't believe the New York Yankees are missing the playoffs. If you guys believe that, say it. If you think the Yankees are missing the playoffs, you have every right to say, Evan, Tiki, Gio, Boomer, Keith, BT, we're missing the playoffs. I don't think you believe that. And I'm not saying that should be the bar, but I don't think they're missing the playoffs. But when you look at their issues right now and you try to define it, mm-hmm. to me it's not missing out on Luis Castillo or missing out on Corbin Burns or missing out on any star. It's actually the lack of depth, which Brian Cashman used to be so good at.
Yeah.
When you look at their success in 18 and 19 specifically, they did it because Gio Urshela came off the scrap heap and was awesome. Mike Tauchman came off the scrap heap and was awesome. Who's done that? They're missing that.
Yeah, you're
They're
right.
missing that depth. So I don't think it's fair to necessarily point at the big trade and say that's what's... They just made a big trade.
Right.
They traded for Juan freaking Soto.
Right, but he's front line. He's not depth. And so you're stuck with the J.D. Davises of the world or the Grishams of the world or hoping that some of these young players are going to come up and be what you hoped that they were when you drafted them. And that's not always the case.
Now, we will get the answer to this Wade Boggs story. Jameel is in Forge, New York. Please tell me how you caught Wade Boggs' hat.
Yes, it's a great story how I caught Wade Boggs' hat. Thanks for having me, Tiki and Evan.
Thank you, man.
Thank you.
Yes, so 1996, I went down to Camden Yards with my friend Ronnie Biederman. And we saw the Yankees win the American League pennant.
Wow.
And Wade Boggs, and like... The stadium was empty. It was about 200 Yankee fans. We went right down to the dugout. And Wade Boggs was coming off the field after they're celebrating, threw his cap up into the crowd. I reached for it. I didn't know if I had it. Someone grabbed my hat. Someone knocked my glasses off. I pulled his hat under my arm, and I look. I see the NY.
Oh.
I see the number 12 written. I'm like, Ronnie, I got that hat.
Do you
still became a magical hat?
Yeah. Did you ever wear it, or did you just like put it away? What'd you do with it?
I wore it for the playoffs only. It was a little small for my head. There's a lot of red hairs in there too. I didn't want to disturb the red hairs either.
Nice.
Nice.
But like, I was single then. I was working as a bartender in a busy sports bar by Rutgers. All my friends were touching the hat during the playoffs. They won 4 out of 5 years of the World Series. My girlfriend was a teacher. She brought him to class. It's like, it's a magical hat.
I think it's a magical hat, too. What a great story. Think about it. He's right. He's in Baltimore when the Yankees won the American League pennant in 1996. This is before they won any World Series mm-hmm. during that era.
Yeah.
They win the World Series. They win it all in 98, 99. Yeah. They were a dynasty. And it's all because of the hat.
It started because of the hat.
The magical hat.
Those hats are fitted. They're not like the hats that we buy.
Yeah.
Right? They're fitted to their head.
God, I want to wear it.
Can't make it bigger.
I want to wear that hat. It also leads me to believe that if the Mets are in the postseason, we're forced to travel with them so I can catch a magical hat.
Mm.
Because if I catch, let's say, Mark Vientos' hat, that means the Mets are going to win the World Series.
He's your
start
new favorite player?
Nah, you know who my new favorite player is?
Who?
Francisco Alvarez.
Oh, I mean, obviously, yes.
I'm in love with him. Like, I am in just absolute...
Talk about hustling.
Oh, God.
He knows how to run.
What do you mean he knows how to run?
So at the end of this game, Luis Torrens was busting it. Also, trying to do his best.
Yeah.
Alvarez was DHing. That's why they're both in, if you didn't watch the game. And I don't know what he did at the bag, but it looked awkward.
Yeah.
And Rosie was like, oh, he's hurt.
It looked that way.
It looked like he was hurt. Well, about two innings earlier, I mean, they're down at this point. Five runs or whatever it was, six runs. And Alvarez hits a ball. It's going to be a double play. But he's busting his ass down the line. And right before he gets to the bag, he shortens his stride, right? So he's got this long, like grinding stride. But right before he gets to the bag, he shortens his stride. And it speeds you up. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's stride length, it's stride frequency and power that determine how fast you are. So he shortens his stride to get more strides in, and he gets to the bag, and he's safe. And I'm just watching, like, dude, this is amazing. It's a catcher, right? And he knows how to run. So many people don't, athletes I'm talking about, don't actually know how to run.
Can you teach the guys on the Mets that don't know how to run, please?
100%.
All right. Please
100%.
Hire him.
It is a learned skill.
How about Boone? Can you help the Yankees out, too?
He doesn't need to be. He doesn't need to run.
He doesn't. No. I mean, he's got guys on his team who don't know how to run.
Yes.
I will volunteer
to teach people how to run.
How about that?
Because I ran track my whole life, and I love running.
Yeah.
So I never got hurt running.
Which is true. I mean, it's kind of amazing. There you go. I think the Yankees and Mets need to not hire him away from us, but borrow him for a couple of hours.
I can moonlight.
Yeah. Moonlight as a professional running teacher. More of your calls coming up. Plus, Pete Alonso's an all-star. I promise we'll get to that next. And it's pissed off a lot of Met fans. And speaking of pissing people off, why does Tyrod Taylor hate the New York Giants? As I've grown older, I've become more mature. And in one area I've become more mature is, let's take Tiki as an example.
Mm-hmm.
Tiki Barber was up to being a Hall of Famer a year ago.
Yep.
He was a semifinalist. And for many years, when it comes to baseball and football and basketball, I have a strong opinion. That guy's not a Hall of Famer. And after a while, I'd feel sort of bad. Like, first of all, if you're being considered to even be in the Hall of Fame, you had a great career.
Of course.
Sort of like, and the example I always love to use is Harold Baines.
Mm-hmm.
Harold Baines is not a Hall of Famer. But the more I rip him for not being a Hall of Famer, I kind of feel dirty. Like, he was fine. He had a fine career. And yet, we get so passionate about, he's not a Hall of Famer. Meanwhile, I know how excited you'd be to be a Hall of Famer.
Of course.
I'm sure Harold Baines, when he found out he was a Hall of Famer,
of course,
was ecstatic.
I know, he definitely was.
And he's got people saying, piece of crap. Meanwhile, no one's suggesting that. Harold Baines is not a piece of crap. He was a wonderful baseball player.
Yeah.
So
that was recent, 5 years ago?
That was five years ago.
2019.
I bring this up because of Pete Alonso.
Hmm.
Pete Alonso is not deserving of being a National League All-Star. I don't think that's a controversial statement. I think that's a fact. I think if you look at Christian Walker, who deserved to make it over him, or you look at his very own teammates like Francisco Lindor and Brandon Nimmo,
yep,
we would all, without yelling at each other, without running Pete down, would say, hey, Pete's not an all-star. But I feel bad. I feel awful because Pete was so happy when he was told yesterday he was an all-star. And Pete's a good guy. Yeah. It's not his fault he's an all-star. That was a selection made by the commissioner's office. So you tell me, as someone who's probably going to hear a lot of, hey, Tiki's a Hall of Famer. You probably hear more of that than the other. But you know there are going to be people who are like, he's not a Hall of Famer. And so with Pete Alonso, what do you want me to say?
It's subjective.
What should I say, Tiki?
About Pete Alonso?
Yeah.
About his all-star nod?
Yeah. Because I feel like it's similar. I don't want to be a jerk.
I mean, I don't want to compare this to other All-Star games because I think a lot of the MLB All-Star selections are by the players and the managers. Like there's a peer evaluation that goes into it.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, you know, the starters in the All-Star game are just it's a fan vote. And
right.
Then
the reserves have different tiers. There's player voting, and then there's the commissioner selections,
yeah,
the way
yeah,
it works
exactly.
Now.
Exactly. Yeah. But there's also this new rule that's relatively young that every team has to be represented.
Right.
And so you get representation from every team, even if the team stinks.
Even if the team doesn't have a deserving all-star.
That's exactly right. And so a team like the Mets, who... Look, is Brandon Nimmo deserving? Absolutely. Is Francisco Lindor deserving? Absolutely. But given the position and given the perception of the team, it's really hard to justify it. You know what I mean? And so it ends up becoming a popularity contest in my mind because this is what happens in the NFL by their peers, right? By the guys who actually are playing the game against the team, the other players that they're voting for in the hall for the All-Star game, in this case the Pro Bowl in the football, it's like a popularity contest.
Right.
How do I know you better? Am I aware of what you're good at, what you're not good at? And if the answer is yes, then you're more likely to get into the All-Star game, or in the case that I was referring to, the Pro Bowl. And I feel like a lot of that is the same.
Well, it's funny in the case of Pete Alonso, and I think we could all be honest with each other about this. The main reason why Pete Alonso was probably selected to be an All-Star game, and it's actually kind of brilliant on his part, Pete made it clear he would not participate in the Home Run Derby unless he was an All-Star.
Yes.
Which I totally get. I think the commissioner probably said, and this has been talked about a lot. I am not new to this. I'm not the first one saying it. It's a popular conspiracy theory that they selected Pete so that he would participate in the Home Run Derby because he is entertaining during the Home Run Derby.
It makes it watchable.
It makes it more interesting.
Because he takes it seriously.
He does.
And, I mean, hell, he could win it.
Yes.
So, of course, Pete Alonso is interesting for the All-Star game. But is he more deserving than Francisco Lindor or Brandon Nimmo? The answer is no.
No, and that's the funny thing about this. I love Pete Alonso. I have been a big proponent of keeping Pete Alonso. I think some of these new age stats actually disrespect Pete Alonso. And I commented on one that I saw on social media earlier today where it was ranking the WPA of every Met player. And I retweeted the stat and I said, all this proves
now. What is WPA again?
It's the win probability added stat. Exactly.
Right.
And to me,
probably going to add this much on average as relative to the rest of the people at his position or in the league.
Well,
something like that?
It was rated amongst Mets, and Pete Alonso was ranked eighth among Mets. Harrison Bader, Jose Iglesias, Luis Torrens, Starling Marte all had a higher WPA than Pete Alonso. And my response was, look, Pete's not an all-star. I'd be the first to tell you. But these stats make him seem like he's a piece of garbage, and he's not. Well, people refer to him like he's awful defensively at first base. But it's not true.
But I think that's less about that. I think it's more about how he's playing right now.
Right, but you know what happens? He got elected above guys that are having better years. Again, I don't even think this is disputable that Lindor and Nimmo deserved it more. And so the response is to trash Pete Alonso. And basically say, see, look how much he sucks. He's got a lower WPA than Jose Iglesias, who's been here for 2 weeks. And it's ridiculous. Pete is not having the best year of his career. He's also not having the worst year of his career.
No.
I think he's already got more doubles this year than he had last year. But is he an all-star? No. I don't think anybody in their right mind thinks he deserved to make it over Lindor and Nimmo.
But he's going to smash 50 home runs in the Home Run Derby.
And by the way, good for him. But we don't need to turn this into bashing Pete Alonso. We don't need to turn this into let's make Pete Alonso the pinata of the New York Mets. He didn't elect himself an all-star. Now, maybe that comment about I'll only participate in the Home Run Derby if I'm an all-star led to him being selected.
Yeah, if I'm not going to the game, I am going to the beach.
That's right. It's Gary Templeton 2024. But let's lay off Pete. Okay, we all know he's not an all-star. No one thinks he's an all-star this year. Even Pete deep down knows he's not an all-star this year. So, do we feel bad for Brandon Nimmo? He'll be fine.
Well, he'll take a vacation and be happy for it.
That's right.
Hang out with his wife, CJ.
What? You know his wife's name?
It's only because she tweeted at Sean.
Brandon Nimmo's wife tweeted at Sean?
Yes.
Can you just very quickly...
It was about the whole thing where he passed out.
Oh, and said what?
Like, we're not taking it seriously. But we knew he was okay. He spoke.
I am so confused.
Yeah.
By the way, Nimmo and Lindor are probably going to get there anyway because guys get hurt and they don't go
or
there.
Or they decide not to.
Right, exactly. And the Alonso thing, you're going to hear it a lot louder probably Monday around 2 o'clock when Sean gets back. At least Pete Alonso, because we get on guys in the NBA that don't want to do the dunk contest. Pete Alonso at least wants to be in the Home Run Derby. Let me check here. Is Aaron Judge in the Home Run Derby?
No.
Ooh, someone's scared.
He can't lower himself.
No, he doesn't want to lose.
Trivial competition.
Aaron Judge doesn't want to lose.
No, but Loogie.
No, I don't think he has anything to do with wanting to lose.
You're the best home run hitter, supposedly.
Because he already did it.
So what? So is Pete. But Pete keeps going back.
But you're right. Like, this will be a debate next week. We can do it right now to get it over with, but this will be a thing next week.
Whether or not Aaron Judge should be in the Home Run
Derby? Know that Pete takes the Derby too seriously. There will be a lot of that. There's no question, because Pete's entering his fifth Home Run Derby, and Loogie's right. Most sluggers do it once or twice, and they're done, and some will look at this as a negative. Pete cares more about this than that. It's obviously ridiculous.
Yeah, but
I have no problem with him being in the Home Run Derby.
Okay, but think about Pete Alonso, and think about why you like him as a player. Because he seems like he's playing the game like you did when you were 12 years old.
Yeah.
He just loves to play baseball.
Yeah.
Loves to be out there. Loves to smash the ball over the fence. It's a kid's mentality.
I agree.
And if anything, you appreciate that. Because so many guys take themselves so damn seriously, they forget they're playing a game and making millions and millions of dollars.
I agree with you.
So I actually applaud Pete Alonso just kind of, oh, I just want to hit home runs. I want to hit the ball as hard as I can.
And he wants to partake in what is a fun competition that, by the way, almost outrates the actual All-Star game itself.
Because when you were a kid, what did you want to do?
Yes.
Hit the ball over the fence.
And he,
period.
He does have a childlike mentality when it comes to the home run derby, but Loogie is right. That will be mocked early next week. You're right. And Sean won't be the only one. It will be mocked by many. Mm. Mostly Yankee fans, some Met fans. I'm telling you right now. The All-Star game to me, as a soon-to-be, you know, mid-40s man, I'm rushing my life, I'm in my early 40s, doesn't mean anything to me anymore.
Yeah.
It's why I'm not angry that Pete Alonso's an All-Star over Francisco Lindor. I'm just stating what I think we all know, which is, hey, he doesn't deserve it.
Yeah,
okay?
Doesn't matter.
I don't watch the All-Star game the way I did when I was 9. Mm-hmm. Now, there are people out there that do, and God bless them. I can totally understand that. So I don't take it that seriously. I like the fact that he enjoys it. All I'm saying is, when I saw him after the game and the look in his eye of being an All-Star and how humble he was about it, I felt dirty saying all this stuff about him. I felt dirty ripping his OPS and saying Lindor's better, Nimmo's better. They are. They've had better years. Again, indisputable. I don't think anyone's debating this. But it's like, the guy's so childlike and he's so happy.
It's garbage that you're even considering cutting your beard.
Shut up, Pete. Shut up. Anyhow, congratulations to Pete Alonso. He's an All-Star. And we'll see if Lindor and Nimmo make it.
And he's going to win the home run derby.
You think so?
Put your money on it right now.
I'm not putting any money on that.
Why?
Because I put enough money.
You don't trust yourself?
I don't trust myself?
Yes.
I don't know if I want to get to that point in life where I'm betting on the home run derby. I'll leave that to Loogie and Sean, because God knows they'll both be doing it.
I love betting on the home run derby. Well, because I don't bet a lot, you know, off-season, no football, so I think it's a fun thing to bet on. You throw a few shekels on a couple guys, it's cool. It makes it exciting.
I got you.
Loogie!
I got you. Have fun. Let's go to Paulie in Bradley Gardens. How you doing, Paulie?
Hey, guys. Pleasure to talk to you.
What's up?
I hate to one-up a guy, but your last caller about the Boggs hat. So the night of the championship, the clincher, I'm watching the game with my dad. Ripken makes the last out. My dad throws me in the car. We go to the Mac machine. You remember the Mac machine?
No, what's the Mac machine?
What is that?
Well, that was before ATM, or it was the money access center. It was at your bank. This is the old school.
Okay.
This is what it was at 96. Anyway.
Gotcha.
He takes out a couple hundred, maybe 300. He gives it to me, drives me to my buddies. We head to the stadium. We get there around 12:30. The place is a madhouse. Now, this is the old way of getting tickets. You just waited in line. You got there. You waited. When you got to the thing, you got your tickets. Now it's all different and everything.
Mm-hmm. Got to have an ad.
So we get there, and the place is an absolute madhouse. There's 20, 30,000 people there. Nobody knows where the line starts or ends or whatever. So we're just cooking out. Next thing you know, the Yankee buses come in about 3 a.m. We run to the buses. We're right up there because nobody wanted to lose their spot in line. So people that didn't know where the line was, we all went there anyway and said, who cares? So the doors open. Boggs jumps out of the bus from the second to top, maybe third to top step, and he crowd surfs for about 30 seconds on his back.
That's great.
And this is the plane flight where he supposedly groped a flight attendant drank 40 beers.
Oh, yeah, I remember that legendary story.
Jeez.
And he's crowd surfing. He's surfing on his back, and we're holding him up, and my buddy grabs his hat, just rips it off his head, and Boggs is laughing. He's going, yeah! So Graham Lloyd and Stanton jump out of the bus. They plow people over. They grab Boggs. They rush him into the thing. So he's got the hat, but the funniest part of the story is the rookie Derek Jeter. After the end, when they got out of the locker room, they get to the players' parking lot. It was right next to the entrance of the stadium, and we're all waiting there. And Jeter gets in this old fashioned station wagon. It was Jimmy Lyritz's station wagon with his whole family in every seat, and Jeter's in the back. Like a little kid driving down to the Jersey Shore. He's waving at us at the big black back window of the station wagon.
Wow. That is some story.
Yeah.
Jeez, I don't know what to do with that. Now I'm picturing the image of Derek Jeter like a child waving his hand.
I mean, what was he, 19?
Nah, I think he was 20, 20. I think he was 21 years old at that point. Right. Wow. A lot of celebrations around the 96 Yankees. By the way, I want to read a quote to you. I want you to tell me if you take offense to this, because you speak for the New York Football Giants sometimes.
Yes, let's hear it.
Tyrod Taylor, now a member of the New York Jets. Mm-hmm. This is no disrespect to the Giants or anything.
Okay, so it's all good.
Well, what?
He clarified it for you.
The first sentence.
Before he made a statement.
No, see, I look at that as the opposite. When you start off by saying no disrespect to blank, you're about to insult them. Like, if I'm about to talk about you, right? My wonderful radio partner, Tiki Barber. And I start a sentence by saying, no disrespect to Craig Carton. I can promise you, I'm about to take a shot at him.
Yeah, go ahead.
You don't agree with that part?
I agree.
Okay, now we're on the same page. Mm-hmm. Now I could read you the rest of Tyrod Taylor's quote. Because for some reason, he hates the Giants. I don't know why.
Really?
When you start a sentence by saying,
I'm saying you don't know why he hates the Giants?
Oh, you have an answer?
I could speculate, but let's hear it.
All right. This is no disrespect to the Giants or anything. But when coming in here and being around the guys for phase one, he's talking about the Jets, it was refreshing, the energy throughout the locker room. On the field, it's just different. I've been on a couple of different teams. I've gotten a chance to feel it out a couple of different teams. I think here we're in great shape. Mm-hmm. There's only room to grow, and I think everyone obviously wants to be on par. So I took it as your locker room had no energy, it wasn't refreshing, and I didn't like being there. That's what I took out of Tyrod Taylor's comment. Tell me if I'm wrong.
No, I don't think you're wrong. I think when Tyrod Taylor got to the Giants, they were old and unreliable. Like, who was exciting on the team? Saquon's coming off an injury. I'm talking about his first year. Saquon's coming off an injury. Daniel Jones is like people think that he is going to start over him. Remember that? When Tyrod Taylor first came to the Giants?
It was a discussion.
I remember having this conversation with BT. How many games into the season before Tyrod Taylor is your starting quarterback?
Right.
And it was like 7, 8, could be 3 or 4. That's how bad people thought that Daniel Jones was going to be. And so that's the expectation. There's a new coach and Dave's. The defense, we have no idea what Wink's going to do with it. I mean, it had to have felt despondent. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so the fact that they won the division, or not won the division, but that they got to the postseason and won a playoff game was a shock. And then the next year, when he should have gotten his opportunity, when Daniel Jones gets hurt, same thing happens to him that happens in every stop.
He gets hurt.
He himself gets hurt, a minor one, but he loses his job because of it.
And then Tommy DeVito starts
he just doesn't get his job back.
Right.
Right? Just the same thing when he got his lung punctured in with the Chargers. He lost his starting job because he couldn't play in the game, and all of a sudden, he doesn't play again. Same thing happened in Houston with the Texans, Stanford? Whatever it was. But he ended up always losing his job.
I know. It's amazing.
It's amazing. So now he goes to the Jets, who are full of 24-year-olds. I mean, the whole team.
Minus the quarterback.
Forget the quarterback.
right.
I'm just talking about everybody else on that team is 24, 25. Right? You get maybe a 30-year-old in C.J. Mosley. Like, they're just young.
Yeah.
Of course it feels amazing. And Robert Saleh has that kind of energy, too. Like that young, I'm a player's coach type of energy. That's just who they are.
It feels with a quote
so
like that.
So I don't think it's a shot. I think it's the reality.
Right.
The Giants were, we all knew it. When Tyrod Taylor first got to the Giants, they were old. The roster was in no position to win.
That's why it was so stunning they made the playoffs.
Exactly. And it's why it keeps turning over. And it's turned over the last couple of years. And you can have the conversation all you want about Saquon and, you know, and Xavier McKinney and these guys that they let walk in free agency. But the Giants needed a reset.
Right.
They needed to get younger. They needed what Tyrod Taylor is talking about. We need some Malik Nabers of the world, right? We need some Wandell Robinsons of the world. We need some guys who are Brian Burns is of the world, who are young and energetic and have their whole careers in front of them. Not they have a history that's still saddled to their back, right? And so that's why I think the Giants made a lot of their moves. I know there's a ton of conversation. I was out last week on the first episode of Hard Knocks, but my takeaway is that's what was going on. That is the directive that Joe Shane has. Now, he was questioned, obviously, by a lot of executives there, including my buddy Tim McDonald, including John Mara, about the Saquon stuff. But ultimately, Joe Shane did what Joe Shane wanted to do.
Yeah. Joe Shane hates running backs. I'm surprised you weren't offended by that.
I'm not.
I think he clearly does.
I think teams are not committed to running backs
right,
anymore.
Right.
My old running back coach wrote me the other day, 2 days ago. No, it was yesterday. I was on my way back. I was on a plane coming back from Ireland. He wrote me this note because there was a stat that in 2003, there were, I want to say, like 8 or 9 of us that eclipsed 1,200 yards rushing.
Oh, God.
Do you know how many 1,200-yard rushers there were last year?
I don't think there were any.
One. Christian McCaffrey.
That's crazy.
And he said, there's just people aren't committed to it.
Yeah.
And I said, you're absolutely right.
No, you're
they
right.
They think the big play can't happen in the run game. Well, of course it can't if you don't run the ball.
Right.
But they've gotten away from running the ball by throwing bubble screens and, you know, slip screens to, you know, tight ends and things of that nature. And they say they're expanding the defense by doing that. But the reality for a running back is there's going to be one guy, if you draw it up correctly, there's one guy that's going to be unblocked. That's your guy. The job is to make that guy miss. And if you make that guy miss, you make big plays.
We'll get to your calls after a Cinco de 5-0 plus a newly available player on the open market before the trade deadline may be the perfect elixir for the New York Yankees. We'll tell you who it is coming up after the Cinco.
Cinco de Tommy.
With Evan and Tiki on the Fan.
That's right.
I like it.
Sean is out, so this is Tommy Lugauer, a Cinco de 5-0 or a Cinco de Tommy. And Cinco de 5-0 is brought to you by Helix Wireless, connecting everything everywhere. And by Wendy's, try the new Pretzel Baconator today. All right, so this weekend marked the return of Edwin Diaz. Of course, he served that 11-game far suspension. So I'm going to give you the top five relievers in New York right now. Mm. All right, here we go.
Here we go!
Number five.
Clay better be number one. I'm just saying.
It's Reed Garrett. Reed Garrett is number five. The red beard, the 2.61 ERA the last month. And I love the intensity, the fieriness that he's shown over the last couple of days. He's been really good out of the bullpen.
He's been very shaky. I mean, even when he gets through innings, he's shaky as all hell. But he
does look badass. We did see him from the Cadillac Club.
But he does get through those
innings. He also did trim the red beard a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, he was looking like me for a while, or I was looking like him. I've obviously gone almost completely shaven. I'm going with the stubble look right now. Reed gave it a little bit of a little trickle.
You're going full beard, dude.
No,
that's not stubble. That's a beard.
That is a beard.
Is the beard coming back?
Yeah. You grew the beard back!
I'm shaving tonight.
You better.
Number four.
Believe it or not, Michael Tonkin. I mean, he stunk. We know that with the Mets early this year, but he has
just
been
gave up a home run. When did you do this list? That was like 3 days ago.
He's been a revelation out of the pen for the Yankees. Tonkin's been good.
I mean, he did give up a home run last night to Tiki's point, but overall, I think his ERA with the Yankees is like 1.4, 1.5.
It's been excellent.
It's been insane. It was like a 7 with the Mets.
Number three,
Luke Weaver. I mean, he's been. I think he's been an all star. That's how well he's pitched.
Weaver's been tremendous, but this list is it's feeling faulty.
Yeah.
It's feeling, I'll let you keep going. Weaver's been great. No issue with him, but keep going.
Number two will tell us if he's being true.
Okay.
Number two.
Daniel Nunez. Oh. The eighth inning setup guy. The bridge.
I tell you, despite what happened the other day, I may put Daniel Nunez number one.
Mm.
That's how good he's been. I had a big issue with Mendy taking him out. Big issue.
Yeah, I was going to say, despite what happened, Mendy took him out.
Well, despite what happened in that, he put a couple of guys on base and he wasn't allowed to finish his story. Mm. And instead, he went with Edwin Diaz. He still gets charged with the two runs. But Nunez got that monstrous strikeout on Brian Reynolds, had the balls to throw that slider. Like, I don't know, man. I'd put him number one, but who do you have as number one?
Number one.
It's Edwin Diaz.
Oh, you're nuts.
After being embarrassed by Rob Manfred, by Major League Baseball, it's still Edwin Diaz, the head of the table, elite dominant closer. He's number one on this list. And even for the haters that say, well, Edwin Diaz, you know what you know why he's the best? Because he gets a reaction on both sides. And if you want to be the best, you get a reaction.
That's fine.
How many of those guys are all-stars?
Yeah, exactly. You left the one reliever who's an all-star off the list.
Who's that?
Clay Holmes.
Oh, get the hell out of here. He's had a 9 ERA the last month. He wet the bed on Friday night. Clay Holmes has stunk the last month.
You can't put Michael Tonkin ahead of Clay Holmes?
Ask any Yankee fan right now. I guarantee you they would have more confidence in Michael Tonkin.
I'd rather have Michael Tonkin as my closer.
And Weaver.
No. Those are called 3 a.m. phone calls to Big Mac that he hangs up on.
Hold on a second.
I'd rather have Tonkin as my closer than Clay Holmes, the all-star.
Evan, have you not championed, and I have as well, for Heel to go to the bullpen?
Well, I've talked about it a lot.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay, so he
what does that have to do with anything?
He should be the closer. The reason you say that is because Holmes stinks.
Look, there may be a road relatively soon where Luis Heel is a big factor out of the Yankee bullpen. We are not down that road quite yet, but we may get to that road. But you can't leave Clay Holmes off the top five. You can't put Reed Garrett over Clay Holmes.
Again, it was
you can't put Michael Tonkin over. You can the only guys you could put over Clay Holmes. I'll give you Diaz based on the whole story. I will. Despite his struggles this year, because he is Edwin Diaz, fine. And I'll even give you my boy, Deadnell Nunez. You can't put anybody else ahead of him.
He's been their best reliever all season. He's been their best reliever.
No, he's had a very good season.
He's been awesome. By the way.
But he's in less pressure situations.
No, but hold on a second. If I told you back in March that a decision made by Aaron Boone to not bring in Luke Weaver would have people calling for Aaron Boone's job,
he gave up a home run yesterday to Rafaela.
No, but he's been great, though. I think he's been their best reliever.
I love you.
Statistically,
there's a bad list.
You're right.
What does it say right now? The top five relievers in New York right now. Currently, what have you done for me lately? You're only as good as your last envelope on
The
Sopranos.
Tommy.
Holmes is stumped.
Tommy, you're a diehard Met fan, right?
Yes.
Brian Cashman calls you up.
Yeah.
He's like, look, I'm feeling frisky right now. I have a thing for redheads, all right? I will give you Clay Holmes for Reed Garrett. You would drive Reed Garrett to the Bronx.
I would not.
Oh, stop.
I would not.
Get the hell out of here.
Because Reed Garrett has stones.
Oh, come on. Get out of here. All right, thank you, Lugie. One quick thing, and we'll get to your phone calls. Yankee fans, Met fans, a little football. We got to address Joe Burrow's brilliant NFL idea. We'll do that coming up at about 5:30. There is a player that is about to be made available. He is a flawed player. I want to make that clear. He is not a perfect player. But I think what Yankee fans have to realize is if they're going to be aggressive before the trade deadline, you're not acquiring a perfect player.
Mm-hmm.
You're acquiring the right players. So there is a report coming out of South Florida that the Miami Marlins would make Jazz Chisholm available via trade. Now, a couple of things. We all need Jazz Chisholm in New York.
Why?
Just for the mistakes.
So Emmanuel could mess it up.
So Emmanuel could mess it up. So Susan could mess it up.
Well, it was like having sex.
So Michael K. can mess it up. So Ryan Rook. Well, Ryan doesn't mess anything up. He's perfect. He's my favorite. But everybody would mess it up. And we need that. Chisholm drives one. Chisholm drives. It's just going to be amazing. So number one, I think we need it for New York City. It just make us laugh. Number two, I happen to think Jazz Chisholm is one of the most overrated players in all of Major League
Baseball. Why do you want him to come to New York?
Glad you asked.
Okay.
So me thinking he's overrated based on being on the cover of MLB The Show and not being able to stay healthy and not fulfilling all his potential is fine. I stand by that.
Okay.
But he's young. He's athletic. He can steal a base, which the Yankees haven't done in like 6.5 years. He's a very versatile player. He's played center field the last few years, but we know he can play second base. We know he can play shortstop. And he's got pizzazz. He's got a little of that pizzazz. I almost look at Jazz Chisholm as such a, like, show that if he came to New York City, he may excel here.
Or because he is so much of a show and he depends on success and adulation, he drowns here.
You think that? Well, that's a possibility.
I don't know.
That's a possibility.
Anything can happen. Because if you think you're the man and you come here and you're not, they will let you know. Constantly.
That's fair.
And consistently.
That's fair.
And some people can handle that and get motivated by it. Others cannot.
Would you take the risk? 26-year-old guy under team control for 2 more years, has versatility, has shown you a little bit of pop, can steal a base.
Probably.
Yeah, that's all I'm saying. Now, look,
probably.
Is there an asking price where I'd say that's too much? Am I trading like a Spencer Jones for him? No, not really. But I'd have a conversation.
But they've also kind of made it known. He's out. Like, they come get him.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So he's available.
Yes.
So it's less, I don't know, I think it's less onerous of a task to trade for him than it would have been if they were saying, no, he's our future. We're hanging on to him. Make us an offer. I think it's different.
Sometimes guys need to be placed in the right situation. And I just wonder if Jazz Chisholm is one of those guys where the bright lights of New York City, Also, by the way, not just the bright lights in New York City. He's been on the worst franchise in baseball. Mm. I know they made the playoffs a couple years ago.
Yeah.
The Florida Marlins, the Miami Marlins, are a joke of a franchise from top to bottom. And I just wonder if Chaz Chisholm learning at the bosom of Aaron Judge would actually benefit him.
Yeah,
he's a young guy who can learn from the greatness of Aaron Judge.
But the challenge is he's a 240, 250 hitter.
I get you. He's not perfect. I didn't say he's perfect.
OPS.
Yeah.
I think he strikes out a ton, but.
I get you.
Yeah. I mean.
No, he does strike out a ton.
He does.
He just doesn't play full seasons.
Yeah, he's flawed.
So if he does play a full season.
He's flawed.
Yeah. Oh, no.
Right. Which is what you led with.
You know who's flawed?
Everybody.
Paul O'Neill was flawed.
True, but.
And the Yankees traded Robbie Kelly for him, Roberto Kelly for him. Showed a lot of guts. Now, Brian Cashman didn't make that trade. The great Gene Stick Michael made that trade. And I'm not comparing Paul O'Neill to Jazz Chisholm, but what I am saying to you is sometimes the best trades that you make aren't the obvious ones. They're not the ones that just slam you on the top of the head like Juan Soto, like, gee golly, trade for Juan Soto. Yeah. He's great. Sometimes it's finding the right guy, moving him to a different situation, and watching him blossom. I will admit, I will raise my hand, there is risk associated with Jazz Chisholm. Mm-hmm. I already told you what they are. You brought up some of the attributes. He hasn't stayed healthy. He strikes out a lot. He's kind of a, hey, me, look, I'm a star kind of guy, which I don't think is a bad thing. That doesn't make you a bad baseball player or even a bad guy.
Only if you can live with the negativity that comes with not producing with that kind of attitude.
Yeah.
Because nobody wants to hear from you or watch you be flamboyant if you're not good.
Can you do me a favor?
Period. What's that?
Can you say Jazz Chisholm's name 5 times in a row really fast?
Jazz Chisholm, 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 Jazz Chisholm. That was like 6 or 7.
That's pretty good.
Jazzrado Ramiz Arrington Chisholm.
Let me throw in the middle names so I don't screw it up.
By the way,
Jazzrado. If you say Jazzrado, you'll never mess it up. Jazzrado Chisholm.
I do want to point this out. You earlier made an accusation that needs to be clarified.
Okay.
Emmanuel Barbari didn't screw up Jazz Chisholm.
Who was it?
Justin Shackle.
Oh, that's right.
Screwed
it was
up
Shackle.
Jazz Chisholm.
It was Shackle.
Do you have that clip, Rosie? How do you have Jazzrado whatever Chisholm, but not
Jazzrado Ramiz Arrington Chisholm?
Do you know why he said Gerardo the whole thing? Do you know why he did that?
Jazzrado Ramiz Arrington, like LeVar, Chisholm Jr.
Do you know why he said that? He said that because earlier he screwed it up.
Yes.
So that was his way. That was his Mike Francesa, Alberto Luis Albuquerque moment.
He transposed the J and the CH to his first and last name. It sounded perfect.
It really did.